Fred Film Radio.
Fred Film Radio, I'm Matt Micucci from the 2019 eStock platform here in Prague, and I'm very pleased to be joined by Phil Jandely. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Phil, you're an editor, and you're here as, let's say, one of the mentors of the eStock platform, in the sense that you did a lecture. And my first question is very simple, just to know a little bit about you. How did you get into editing?
I'm a dinosaur, so I've been doing this for a long time, a little over 20 years. I'm one of the last generation of people who actually worked with cutting actual film before I started working digitally. I went to film school, and I had ambitions to be a filmmaker, and I've made a few short films since then, but I found that I was more comfortable in the edit room because I still play a major role in shaping and developing a film, either from the early stages or from the ending stages, but I get to play with the material and turn it into something beyond what, you know, I can make a contribution to make it hopefully more than what it was before I touched it.
Yeah. Well, speaking of the transition from film to digital, how did you find that? Was it difficult to transition?
I was excited about it, but I am a bit of a dinosaur and an old-fashioned guy, so it took me a little while to stop missing the feeling of touching the film. Because, you know, people think that, like, working with the film was slow and it was, you couldn't do as much, and that's true. But at the same time, when you're working with film and you're used to doing it a lot, you get very fast, and you can pre-visualize in your head what nowadays you would be able to render out in real time. You know, whereas a director can try to imagine what they're going to see on the screen if they have a track of music underneath or a sound effect or a visual title or something like that. They had to imagine it in their heads before. And I think that there was a more elastic kind of creativity going on in those days. But again, that's nostalgia.
Well, it's nostalgia, but hopefully, I don't know, these things come back around. If you look at vinyl, I mean, I'm always thinking that we'll be seeing film in the future too. I don't know if you agree with that.
I think film will always have a place, and there's still people who shoot on film. And I know, Christopher Nolan made Dunkirk. I think he shot it on film. Yeah. There'll always be a fashion for that. I was thinking more about the process and, you know, the quick undos and the speed with which you get the material into the computer and that you can manipulate it. I think it opens up a lot of possibilities. But in the same way that nowadays I'll get 400 hours of material instead of 40 hours of material, there's a tendency to sort of, you know, go for excess, go for more is more instead of being more selective. So it just has an impact on the way that I work as well as the way that a creator works. When the world is limitless, then you shoot everything. As opposed to, I have a budget of $40,000, so I'm going to shoot 5 minutes of film per day. No, I'm going to shoot 2 hours of material a day, and then you filter through it afterwards. It's just a different way of working.
But so since the transition, has the technology sort of advanced at a more rapid pace, and is it difficult to keep up with the ways in which it's developing and advancing?
It's evolving so quickly, and not just because of the software, but because of the technology with which we shoot. There's a lot of editing software that's become obsolete now because it can't handle all the different formats that come in from all the different cameras that are on the market. I'm not a super technically strong editor. I deal more with the content. And so I struggle sometimes when it comes to adapting to updates in software or, 4K camera work is all the rage now. So that means I have to handle it differently, but I have to learn all the time if there's a new thing. But again, those are small stages problems, because ultimately, whatever nostalgia I have for the good old days, cannot argue with the fact that everything is way simpler and faster now. So even if I do get a ton of material, it's not the end of the world, because I can move through it more quickly, and my process has evolved to be able to handle, you know, I know what I'm looking for way, way more because I've got 20 years of experience under my belt.
And so how do you like to work, or how do you have to work nowadays? Are you constantly working on different projects, or do you like to work with one project at a time, or do you get to do that?
The dream is to do one project for 3 or 4 months or something like that. Do a deep dive into content so that I get to feel everything. But that's rarely the case because this is documentary and documentaries just don't have those kinds of budgets very often. I have a hybrid career now. So I spend some time working on, I do consultations where that can be anything from a couple of days to a couple of weeks. I do what I call doctoring. I'll come in more towards the end of a post-production process, and I'll spend a month or 2 months working on a film to totally shape it in its final stages. And I also do a lot of consulting and tutoring. I do about 10 to a dozen workshops a year where I travel around a lot of the ex-Soviet countries, some places in Western Europe, and when I'm lucky, to Asia, to like Korea, South Korea, Malaysia, and I do to bring a more Western touch to filmmakers who are trying to enter the international market.
Speaking of which, do you think that, well, would you say that editing is a difficult career to get into?
It's difficult to make it into, to get into the stream, because, you know, there are a few editors that everybody wants to work with, and if they have to, they'll wait a couple of years to work with them. And making a name for yourself when you're just coming up is difficult. I think that a bit like when I got out of film school back in my hometown of Montreal, a lot of the people who stayed there, they still work together. They're the ones who, you know, one cinematographer works with the same director a lot of the time and the same set designer and so on. And because of that, they formed sort of the present geological layer of talent, I guess. And if you stay in your own home zone, then that's possible. But when it comes to documentary, that's harder to do because a lot of projects are shot in different lands. There's the question of which language the film is shot in. There's the question of if you do a co-production with another country, then they might insist on having somebody on the team from their homeland. If my present land of Sweden does a co-production with France, they might have to insist on getting a French editor, for example. So that's, it's a constant battle to try to get these things funded and to survive through production and post-production, so you don't always have the luxury of being able to work with exactly who you want. And that has an impact on if you got an editor from the Czech Republic who wants to break into the international market. Unless they've got a co-production with another country that needs to have a Czech editor, then they might not have that many options to get into the industry. That's why I know a few people who, they move to London or they move to Holland, where there's a larger kind of home market to work with, and they start off small there.
I don't know. I think that's one of the most frustrating things about the film industry. Despite all these digital revolutions and stuff, there's still hot spots in the world that you need to be at if you really want to like make it in the industry and just become a professional and have lots of contacts.
Yeah, I think the technology, those are the tools that we use, and the tools are ultra important, and they're causing part of the evolution about how films get made. But when it comes to the politics and the financing, it's weird. I mean, being in the EU, there's so many different possibilities for co-productions that I don't even know how to keep track of them. You know, I try to consult with filmmakers if they're looking for solutions. I have some ideas, and especially about the Scandinavian market, but the trouble is, I mean, there's a few problems. One is that because technology is so readily available, there's a sort of a, not citizen journalist, but I mean, everybody feels that they can be a filmmaker. And to a certain degree, that's true. The technology is there. And a lot of creativity is out there. And I think that that's brilliant. But it also means that if you go to a festival like this one, or IDFA in Amsterdam, or Hot Docs or Sundance, you got a catalog that's 3 inches thick of films that travel around all over the place, get screened at these festivals, and then disappear. There is a massive oversaturation of content. So on the one hand, that encourages and inspires people to make films, and on the other, that means that there's not so much room for them to enter the market. So it's a weird time, I think.
It was a pleasure talking with you.
Thank you. Pleasure talking with you, too.
Thanks very much. And this is Fred Film Radio, the Festival Insider.
Fred Film Radio, 24/7 on fred.fm and smartphone apps.